This RFM podcast was brought to you with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Hi folks, this is Richard Hall here from Stonehenge, Aotearoa, and we look at the night sky, and I've also got Kay with me as well.
Hello everybody.
And I always like to thank Dan Broughton of Wairarapa Web Design who supports this program. Well, I know, I've just travelled through quite a lot of rain actually to get here at the radio station, but it's the middle of winter, and of course the middle of winter gives us the most beautiful night sky. And then that image you're looking at of the stars above Stonehenge, actually cut that particular region comes directly overhead during the winter. Okay. But first of all, just to remind you of a few other things. Stonehenge Aotearoa will open at the moment from Wednesday to Sunday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. All right, and you can just come along and see an audio visual and take you around the henge. But we also do guided tours where you get someone like me, normally is me, isn't it, Kay?
And
yep. Who takes you on a special guided tour in which we do all the storytelling and look at the things from antiquity and so on and the rise of civilization. You better get there again. And the other thing we do, of course, is Star Treks, right? Would you like to say a few words about that, Kay?
Yeah, guided tours and Star Treks need to be booked ahead of time. Self-guided tours, you can just turn up Wednesday to Sunday, 10 to 4. But don't make it 5 to 4. You need about half an hour to get the value out of a self-guided tour.
Yeah. The Star Trek, of course, is always weather dependent, and in which we would take you on a guided tour of the night sky, right? So, but anyway, you can, for more information, you can just phone up Kay, right?
It's a pretty good description on the booking page, yeah.
Well, the big program we've got coming up, we've gone through the solstice, is the Legends of Matariki. And most New Zealanders probably won't realise that the legends and Matariki marking the beginning of the year and all that sort of thing actually goes back thousands of years in time into Europe and Asia. We'll be discussing all those sorts of things. The programme starts at 4:30 p.m. on Friday, July the 10th. All right, but you do need to book. I think we're getting quite heavily booked, aren't we, at the moment, Kay?
Yeah, we've got a few spaces left, but not many.
Yeah. Mm. Okay, so that's Friday, July the 10th at Stonehenge, Aotearoa at 4:30 p.m. Okay. Well, as I just mentioned earlier, we're into the winter night sky, and the night sky that we're showing, and we're looking at the imagery of the night sky for those of you watching on TV, is for latitude 40 degrees south in early June, around about 10:30 p.m. Okay. Well, the first thing you have to do when you go out to find your way around the heavens, the first thing I always do is to work out northeast, south and west, as it were, as far as the night sky is concerned. And that's what I call celestial navigation. And how we do that? Well, the Southern Cross. And that's why the Southern Cross is so famous, because it allows us to find our way around. All right, there it is there, the Southern Cross, which at this time, yeah, is laying on its side. And you can always pick out the Southern Cross because it's got those two bright stars that follow it around the sky, which we call the pointers. And the brighter of the two, of course, is Alpha Centauri, and it's the nearest star beyond the solar system. Anyway, that's the Southern Cross, and the Southern Cross points to another star, Achenar. And come halfway in between, and you're looking at the South Celestial Pole. And this is a point around which the entire heavens appears to rotate. And now, of course, it's not the heavens that's rotating, it's actually the Earth. But if you were standing at the South Pole, that spot would be directly overhead. And as the Southern Cross slowly moves around the pole, so does Achenar. And so anytime the Southern Cross is, you can go out there and see the Southern Cross, you'll be able to find Achenar, because they never set from this particular latitude. Once you've found the South Celestial Pole, you can just roughly work it out. with your finger, halfway in between the crux and Agena, drop to the horizon, and you're looking due south. So that's how it all works. And also at this time of the year, we've got a nice big bright star there, which is Canopus. Okay, so there's your celestial navigation. And once you've got north, east, south and west, if you've got some star charts, you can begin to work yourself around.
It's not too bad. As long as your nose is pointing either north or south, then your back of your head's the opposite one, and then your shoulders are the east and west. I mean, it's not too hard.
That one, that's right, yeah. And as I said, we do have Canopus, which is the second brightest star in the sky, is almost absolutely due south at that particular time, all right? When we turn around and we look towards the north, all right, and you can see in the image there, we've got some snow on the mountains, which I believe we did have some snow on the mountains, didn't we, the other day, Kay?
It's hard to tell whether it's snow or just heavy frost.
Yeah.
I think it might have been heavy frost.
Okay, yeah. So we're looking up, and we can go around and have a look at the brightest stars that are in the sky at the moment. First is Arcturus, then Vega, Altair, Antares, Spica, right, and then Deneb. So those are the six brightest stars when we look into the north. Right? And over the coming weeks, we'll begin to look at each of these individually, so that you can work out what they're. And just like planets vary from one planet to another, exactly what they're like, exactly the same thing applies to the stars. Right? So we'll be having a look at those in detail later on. But at the moment, coming overhead, of course, we've got the Scorpion with Antares in there. And there's the Scorpion. Antares is the heart of the Scorpion. And it lies very close to the brightest region, the Milky Way. Now, those stars of the Scorpion down here in New Zealand are the fishhook of Maui.
It fished up our island because those stars are important for finding your way to the Hawke's Bay, basically. And that's where the Takitimu canoe came in.
Yeah. So what the early navigators would look, the Polynesian navigators would look, is they'd look for these stars, and we're showing them stars as they move around as their different orientation, but they do look like a big hook. And if you try sail towards this fish hook, the lands of Aotearoa rise up out of the sea.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
On the horizon, they will appear to rise up. Well, what you'll see is a big, long bank of cloud, probably, rather than the... It's amazing. You don't have to go very far offshore. You think there's no cloud when you're on the land, but when you go a little way offshore, it looks like a bank of cloud. It's quite amazing. I've sailed in a sailing boat not very far off the coast, and it looks like a bank of cloud, and yet you thought it was a fine day when you were on the land.
And you'll also notice by what I'm just saying now, there's a lot of the stories you probably learnt when you were a kid about the fishhook of Maui fishing up the land. You think it's just a story. It's not. It's very, very practical. All right? So as a navigator, these would have been very important stars.
It tells you lots of things. It tells you about the orientation of the stars when you're in the northern hemisphere. It tells you about the orientation of them when they're in the south. It also tells you about how to find your latitude, because you haven't got modern astronomical things to do that. You have to do that by knowing where the stars pass over the land, or, you know, that kind of thing, rather than how we do it in modern navigation. Yeah.
And if you do go out, once the sky is cleared up, you go out, you'll find that the Scorpion is a really easy constellation to pick. It's one of those constellations that does really look like what you should think it should look like, right? So you've got, remember, Antares, the heart of the Scorpion, and then it goes down to this great curve of stars which forms the hook. So there's the fish hook in the sky at the moment. Okay. And now I've just picked up Antares and just pulled up a little photograph of Antares, and it's embedded in a big cloud or a material that's been hurled out from Antares, and you see it's got a yellowy-orange colour, or it's simply reflecting some of the light that's coming from Antares. Now, as it also mentions there, the distance to Antares is 605 light years. Now, folks, that's a hell of a distance, even for stars, right? Bear in mind that Alpha Centauri, which we were looking at earlier on, which is the closest star, is just 4 light years away. This is 605 light years, yet it is still one of the brightest stars in the sky. And that immediately tells you this is no ordinary star.
It's big.
It must be big and bright in order to be this visible at that distance. Right, I pulled up an image of what we think Antares would look like from a planet. She was standing on it. And as it mentions there, its luminosity, how much light is being sent out, is 75,900 times greater than the sun. In other words, Antares is equal to nearly 76,000 suns. Right? And our sun is no small star. Right? Most of the stars in the galaxy are not as bright as our sun. So this is a true giant. And it does have a reddish colour. And so it's what we call a red supergiant. Right? And as you can see down there, its diameter is 883 times that of the sun.
So we would be inside it.
Yes. If it replaced it where the sun is, we would be inside it. But also what we do know is that Antares gradually changes in brightness, and this is because the entire star is slowly pulsating.
And that's because it's dying, isn't it, slowly?
Yeah. What happens is,
if you could, of its life.
The common stars you see out there, bright stars in the galaxy, tend to be blue-white or white in colour. And when they begin to run out of energy, the core begins to collapse, and the remaining energy is used up faster and faster, and it swells into becoming a red supergiant star. Well, if it was a smaller star, the chances are eventually it would collapse, and the core would collapse, the rest of the outer regions would puff out into space, and it would just end up as a hot cinder, which we'd gradually cool. However, Antares has got a mass of nearly 16 times that of the entire solar system. Right? And the chances are that when this thing collapses, it's going to turn into a violent eruption or explosion called a supernova. And when it turns into a supernova, and of course we don't know quite when that's going to happen, but I tell you what, you'll be able to see it in broad daylight. It'll be that bright. So, yeah, it's quite a spectacular star. Now, for those of you watching this on the TV, I've just brought in an arrow which picks out a star which shows you our sun, if we placed it next to Antares, how big and bright it would appear.
Yeah, when we look at that other star, you've got another smaller star next to it, which is one that was even bigger, isn't it, that's ended its life earlier?
Well, no, the star that you can see there, actually, Antares is a binary star system, and it's got a companion star, right, which orbits around it in a period of 878 years. Now, it looks small compared to Antares, but it's not that small. It's still almost 3,000 times brighter than the sun.
So this is a star which is smaller than Antares, always was smaller,
yeah,
and it's got more life left.
Oh, yes, yeah.
So it's burning at a lower rate.
It will turn into a red giant one day.
Okay, yeah. And when you showed it on the other one, you showed it with a green colour. A lot of stars don't look green. Why does that one look green?
Well, I tell you what, I've looked at Antares, and why I put it as green is when you look at it in the telescope and you can see the companion, in its contrast, the green stands out at the most. So it looks like you've got a ruby, which is Antares, and you've got this little tiny green emerald star as there.
So
as
it's
well.
it's just the effect on your eyes.
It's a contrast. It's actually the most dominant radiation coming from Antares B is blue, which is shown in this picture at the moment.
Yeah. Okay, interesting, eh?
Yeah, but don't think you'll see this with a small telescope. Antares is so big and bright, and the two are so close together, you do need a very large telescope to actually see them.
Mm.
And I've just brought up the age of Antares, which is 11 million years. Now, you might think that's a long time, but it's not. As far as the ages of stars are concerned, this is a baby, right? I mean, our sun is 4,600 million years old, right?
It's because it's burning its fuel so fast. Is that right? Yeah.
It's a giant star, and the bigger a star is, the quicker it evolves, right? And so the lifetime of a giant star is only a fraction of that of what it is of our sun.
So it probably wouldn't have time for anything to evolve and worlds around it, would it?
Well, there would be worlds around it, but there certainly wouldn't be any life there.
Well, if it was, it'd be very primitive, wouldn't it? I mean, single cellular sort of stuff.
That's right. As you imagine the planets being 11 million years old.
Hasn't had enough time.
Now, this one here is red hot. But most of anything closer than that would be molten. Yeah.
So it'd have to be a long way further out.
Mm.
And then it probably hasn't evolved. Because
yeah.
If we look at our own solar system, life was there fairly quickly, seeded onto anything, but didn't evolve into multicellular until much later.
Yeah, well, that's the important thing that's happened with our sun. Is it's reached this stable point in its life where it's pumping out energy, and the Earth just happens to be within that zone where liquid water can exist. I mean, when we came here to the radio station,
it was a lot of liquid water.
Yes, we were grumbling about the rain, but that is the substance of life itself, right?
Mm.
I mean, you yourself are made up mostly of water, aren't you? Human beings.
Yeah, and space.
Yeah. And water is a medium in which life can evolve. So the Earth is just at a spot at a distance from the sun where water can exist. And the mass of the planet is such that it can remain in a liquid state.
But that's only a period of time, isn't it? Well, the sun is gradually increasing in brightness.
That's right.
I mean, even if we didn't mess it up with global warming and stuff, eventually it would get to a stage where we wouldn't be able to be around anymore.
All global warming is doing is accelerating the processes.
Yeah, bringing it into our lifespan.
That's right, yeah. But the planet also has to be the correct mass, all right?
Mm.
The gravity is such that liquid water can exist on the surface. If you reduce the mass, the gravity decreases and the boiling point of water goes down. So if you had a planet half the size of the Earth, the boiling point of water wouldn't be 100 degrees Celsius. It would be something like 20 degrees Celsius or something like that. And on the moon, which has only got 1/80th the mass of the Earth, water can't exist there. And because you're made mostly of water, if you go onto the surface of the moon without a spacesuit, you would literally explode as the water in your body would turn
vaporize.
Yeah. So that's why you need your space suit.
You don't usually see that in the space fiction ones, do you? They just float off into the distance.
And that's the lovely thing about looking at I find is that as we look out amongst the stars, we see all these different stars and almost certainly planetary systems around them, where just about anything we can imagine must exist. And we can look at also stars similar to the sun, but at different ages, and know that if there's Earth-like planets around them, they'll be in these different stages of what the Earth was in the past. Yeah.
I can remember when we were at Carter Observatory, you and I, and they were discovering the first planets around, you know, extra solar planets, that one of the ones they found was where there had been a supernova and planets had formed. So it seems like planet formation just happens when you've got debris.
Right, yeah. Mm. Yeah. That's right. Okay, now, for those looking on this on TV, I've gone back to having a look at the night sky there, and I've drawn up a big oval around the brightest region of the Milky Way, and it's the brightest region, because when we look at this. We're looking towards Galactic Centre. Right? So I'll bring it up a bit better so we have a look at a photograph of it. There it is, Galactic Centre. There you can see Antares. And this is the brightest region. Those dark regions that you can see, they're not dark because there's no stars. These are actually clouds of dust and cosmic dust and gas, which are simply blotting out the light of more distant stars. And this is the raw material from which new stars are formed. And just to bring up the Scorpion, there it is there. Right?
But you can't actually see the Galactic Centre, can you?
No, you can't. When I say we're looking towards Galactic Centre, and I've brought that star up now, that's the direction of it, right? But we don't see Galactic Centre, we're just seeing the gas, dust, clouds and stars in between us and Galactic Centre. I've just pulled up a picture of the Milky Way galaxy. Now, when I say that, it's not a photograph. It's going to be a long time before we take a photograph. This is a photograph of another galaxy, which astronomers believe is very, very similar to our Milky Way galaxy. And looking at this galaxy, I've also put where the Sun would be. All right? Now, you've got to remember, when you're looking at this, it's over 100,000 light years in diameter. Right? And you've got this bright central region. Now, the centre of the galaxy is 26,000 light years away, right?
Just as well, really.
Oh yes, and I just brought up a red ring, and that ring shows you all the stars. A Milky Way that we can see in our galaxy is inside that ring. You see, because we are, in a sense, our sun is part inside that great big forest of stars. And they blot out the light of more distant objects. So due to the gas and dust and other stars, the red ring encompasses all the things that we can see. So as you can see, we can only see a small part of our galaxy. If we could be lifted up away from the plane of the galaxy, we'd see a lot more. But at the moment, we can't. Mm. Okay, so they're going back to where Galactic Centre is actually in that particular photograph there. All right. But whereas we can't see with the visual things, what we can look through is with radio waves. And radio telescopes and so on pick up a virtually an inferno of energy that's coming from Galactic Centre. And it's concentrated on a thing called Sagittarius A. Sagittarius, because it's in the constellation of Sagittarius. And it's this big, bright radio source there, which the arrow has pointed out. And this is an absolutely awesome object, right? Its distance from us is 26,000 light years, Sagittarius A. So this is telling you that Sagittarius A is at the very center of the Milky Way galaxy. Well, we've been able to work out what this thing is using, this and X-rays and so on and so forth. They discovered that this object has got a mass of 4.3 million suns. So in there, at Sagittarius A, is an object which is over 4 million times the mass of the entire solar system. Right? However, its size in physical size is just 26 million kilometres. That's just 19 times the size of the Sun. So it's relatively small for its enormous mass. And, when we look closer, and what we can see with space telescopes is in the vicinity of Sagittarius A, the stars as we get towards Galactic Centre become closer and closer together. Whereas in this part of the galaxy, stars may be five light years away. As we get in there, they're below a light year and everything is getting closer and closer together. And what we're looking here is at Lyra 1, which is a cluster which is relatively close to Galactic Centre, just 2,600 light years from Galactic Centre. But you can see how the stars are just crowding together there. Okay, and now we go in closer and looking with our radio telescopes, and again we begin to pick up this inferno. Sagittarius A is near the centre. And what we've actually got here when we look at Sagittarius is a hole in space and time. This, what we're looking down, is a tunnel into a gigantic black hole.
Doesn't look very black. Ah, that one looks black.
You wouldn't want to travel near this thing. This is the great big black hole at the centre. It's the biggest black hole, obviously, in the galaxy. And it has a gravity of over 4 million times that of the sun. So you don't want to get too close to that, all right?
Mm.
And its diameter is just 26 million kilometres, which makes it pretty small, but gigantic in its gravitational power. And it appears to be swallowing up other stars, because any star or planetary system that gets too near it gets gradually woven into it and then torn apart and then swallowed by the black hole. And it seems to be swallowing stars and planetary systems at the rate of one or two solar systems a year.
So, oh, that's all.
Yes, it's a pretty awesome object, all right? And this is the center around which everything else is rotating.
And as it swallows these solar systems, it's gaining mass, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
So if it's gaining mass, it's gaining gravitational power,
yeah,
which means it can pull things from, I don't suppose, it can pull more things in, yeah, can't it?
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting thing, because if you fell into the black hole, right, it's not just crushing gravity, right? We said a planet there. You actually travel through space and time. So as you fall into that black hole, you would see the entire future of the universe flash between your eyes. But of course, that knowledge would be for you alone.
Yeah, I can't prove you wrong, can I?
Because there's no coming back from this thing, okay?
Because if I went down there to prove you wrong, I wouldn't be around anymore.
But as I said, the really fascinating thing is that things which we think are unalterable, like time and so on, begin to completely break down when we get near a black hole.
Yes, they're beginning to discover that time is not what we think it is.
No. Well, that is another thing, actually. We think, oh, well, yesterday's gone, right? Well, actually, recent experiments in the United States and have discovered that this is not the case, that the past still exists. And that's a weird thing, because if we can learn how to travel through time and travel through time, so you could travel back to yesterday, who could you meet?
Yourself.
Yourself, because you were there yesterday. But apparently that's not impossible. And they've been trying it out with the accelerators, whereby a particle
can meet itself.
Yeah. It arrives before it's fired. It's like having a gun. And the bullet arrives at its destination before you pull the trigger. That's what happens, all right?
Some things I wouldn't want to have happen before they happen, because you'd end up with more of it.
Yeah. We should probably have a program where we talk about space and time, because a lot I'm saying is probably confusing a lot of people. We should probably explain things like relativity and so on.
But it's fun.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's real fun to look outside your own little...
That's a colossal black hole, and that is obviously a huge mass from around which the galaxy has formed, right?
Yeah, yeah, it has a lot to do.
That's why it's spiraling around this gigantic, massive object. And actually formed in the galaxy, along the plane of the galaxy, are other black holes. Because those giant stars like Antares we were looking at earlier, it will end up as a black hole eventually.
Mm.
Yeah.
Black holes do tend to like to be together, don't they? They do end up coalescing.
Yeah. Yeah, all right, we should do something on black holes in detail later on. Okay, folks, so lots of interesting things. If you look up there at the night sky, find the scorpion, look by close by, and you're looking in the direction of that gigantic black hole. Just a final reminder, The Legends of Matariki, 4:30 p.m. Friday, July the 10th at Stonehenge Artera, but you do have to book, all right, because there are always limited spaces there. And having said that, take a tour into the past. You can come out to Stonehenge at any time. And I'm doing something wrong here, aren't I?
The website address will work, but we've got the more modern one, which is www.stonehenge-aotearoa.nz.
Right. I will change that in the Philippines.
Yes, we do say that every week, fortnight or whatever.
Okay, folks, we'll catch up with you later. Do have fun. And remember, if you want to see the stars, get in touch with us.